Hail, cheaters, and welcome to Always Cheating, a Fantasy Premier League podcast. I am Brandon, and I'm here with my co-host, the greatest American FPL player. It's Josh.
Hey, Brandon, how are you? Completely untrue, but nice to hear from you.
I'm doing pretty well coming off of Game Week 4. And Game Week 4 was the first Josh Fantasy Premier League meltdown of the season. Did you have the best weekend?
I did not have the best. I personally, on a personal level, I had a nice weekend. I went out and I did some birding on Sunday, saw a few things. Saturday was another disaster. Two of the last 3 weeks have been really quite terrible for me. And I think I might be tinkering too much now, actually. I think I've gone the other way. I was holding back in the early weeks, and now I'm overcorrecting, and I've got to find some happy medium.
Well, this, of course, is a podcast devoted to the Fantasy Premier League. We first want to welcome all of our new listeners that we have since our last episode of the podcast. And, Josh, we have somebody to thank, too.
Yeah, just a thank you to TransferHub.com, who wrote a little post about us and seems to have sent a lot of people our way. So thank you to those guys. And you can check them out at TriggerLips.com. And I'm actually not sure what that means. I think it must be some sort of New Zealand expression or something, or maybe it's something really obvious that I've just never heard before.
Well, I've never heard it either, so that's one for the listeners out there.
But we're two Americans, you know, we don't know that much.
So on this show, we are going to give the rundown of our new public league Hail Cheaters to see who's in the lead there. And we're also going to take a look at the closing of the transfer window in the Premier League that happened today as we're recording this episode. Run down the fixtures of Game Week 4 and then look ahead to Game Week 5 coming up. Did I miss anything there?
That sounds pretty thorough. That sounds like a solid hour right there.
So going back to welcoming our new listeners, you have to go to our site, alwayscheating.com. There's a link there to our public FPL league called Hail Cheaters. We now are up to 10 players. And let's see.
It might have been higher had we credited before the season actually started, but you know, that's all right. We'll take it.
We have to hire a publicity intern, I think, to get this really going. But up to 10, that's double digits. That's not bad. That's enough to keep it interesting. Mm-hmm. So we're not faring terribly well in this league of ours. Let's see. I'm in sixth place, and you're down there, Runepig Genesis, in 9 out of 10 position.
Yeah, I actually, when Pele scored on Sunday morning, I actually thought to myself, well, at least we're both not going to be at the bottom of the Hail Cheaters League anymore. At least one of us, because it was kind of embarrassing to create your own public fantasy league and then have you and your co-host mired at the bottom of the league. Just does not read very well. So I am still I'm in 9th out of 10th, and you are now in 6th. So that's not too bad.
Hey, as they're fond of saying, it's a long season. But up at the top, we have to give, we have to tip our hat to Ajax Trees Down. Mm-hmm. Who appears to be a Newcastle fan, and he has Wilson up front on 7 points, and Andre Ayew, who I am definitely looking at for my game week 5 transfer.
How could you not after the Man U game?
Yep, Karlov and Shaw in the defense were big for him. He ended up with 52 points on the week, and he's leading the Hail Cheaters League above 202 points. And then we've got Mangueros in second and 11 Best Friends, which is a good Men in Blazers shout right there in third place. So, again, go to our site at alwayscheating.com. There's the code there to join our public league Hail Cheaters. All right, now going back to, Josh, your dismal week, usually we start the show with our winners and losers. It's going to be hard for you to pick out the biggest loser.
I'm tempted to pick myself again, as I did in Game Week 2.
You got to spread the blame.
Yeah, I suppose I'll go with Martin Skrtel, though. I'm going to direct my frustration at Mr. Martin Skrtel.
And he was your transfer in this week, wasn't he?
Yeah, I had three possible moves that I was planning to make this game week. One was to stand pat and stay with Luke Shaw, which would have worked out great. One was to transfer in Bakary Sagna, which also would have worked out great. And the other one was to transfer in Martin Skrtel, who gave me 1 point. And I lost the clean sheet like within the first five. I mean, there's nothing worse than making a transfer. I don't like transferring to defenders to begin with, making a defender transfer and then immediately losing the clean sheet. And he's not even like on the wings, right? It's like maybe he'll score a header. It's possible. You know,
he's a great threat on corner kicks, but yeah, you're right. That's going to be like once every 5 weeks if you're really lucky.
Yeah, exactly. So that did not work out that well. You know, I was tinkering too much. Luke Shaw, you know, on the road to Swansea, it would have been fine. You actually pointed this out in last week's podcast too, and you said, you know, you can get assists, you can get goals, and I just sort of dismissed it, and I was pretty sure that Swansea would score on the road as they or at home as they did. But I just didn't account for Luke Shaw's crosses, and he looked really good the last game too. So it really was kind of foolish not to bring him in. But live and learn.
You do have to live and learn. I ended up starting Luke Shaw, though. Like you, I was really confident that Swansea was going to score against them. But he is really great at getting into the penalty box, delivering service. But he. It's hard to tell if he was to blame for that second Swansea goal. He was basically walking back to try and catch up with Gylfi Sigurdsson and Andre Ayew as they were pushing forward.
Great pass from Ayew to Gomez. I mean, Gomez is he's a hard person to stay on top of.
Yeah. So it's unclear to me whether LVG's setup is, okay, Luke, get up front and be offensive, and you'll depend on Chris Smalling to basically cover you if there's a counterattack. And yeah, that was definitely the plan on that play anyway.
That goal was the assist he got was so painful too, because, you know, once you transfer out a player, you want nothing more than for them to do terribly.
And right? how closely were you scrutinizing that replay to see if Rooney actually got the touch to get the assist?
Yeah, it was like the Zapruder film. I mean, I was watching, I wish I had like old film that I could splice and like really like blow it up and look at it from every angle. Back in the day, I feel like the FPL used to be really the slightest touch and they would call it an assist. Although actually they didn't have it a David Silva earlier this season.
Yeah, Lukaku has been the great benefactor of many glancing assists.
It's almost the Lukaku. I was actually thinking of Lukaku when I said that. So I think, you know, whatever. You know, he's going to get some crosses. My logic was sound. I think I actually made the right decision. I don't want a Monday morning quarterback myself too much.
Yeah, I guess
I couldn't afford Kolarov without. Sorry to talk over you.
No,
I couldn't afford Kolarov without making two transfers. And once it became clear that Gael Clichy was out for several weeks, I really wanted to make sure that Kolarov was the player I brought in. So the idea was I already had two Man City players. I couldn't bring in two defenders. So I thought I wouldn't bring in Clichy. I'll wait till next week and turn probably Azpilicueta into Kolarov. Although now I'm thinking about two transfers because I'm a little worried about Memphis Depay, and I may have to burn some points.
Yeah, Depay is public enemy number one in my squad right now. But yeah, your logic was sound bringing Skrtel in, but now your logic is a little unsound because this pattern is emerging for West Ham to be on fire when they're away from home, particularly against big clubs. So now they've decimated both Arsenal and Liverpool at their home stadiums.
I just overthought it. You know, the move would have been to just not make a transfer. You know, sometimes you just want to make a transfer. You just can't resist.
So Martin Skrtel is your loser. Any winners in Runepig Genesis
week? I'll go with Bafétimbi Gomez, who looked fantastic.
His first bonus point of the campaign.
That's right. Only one, of course. Even though he was... I mean, AU, of course, had to get two. I was a little surprised Luke Shaw got two over Gomez.
But... Yeah, it was similar to what we saw with Azpilicueta in game week one when they tied against Swansea and... Aspie ended up with, what, two, maybe three bonus points off of that two goal after letting in two goals?
Yeah, I think it was two bonus points. He finished with six in that game. So, you know, but yeah, so Gomez is my winner. There's not much more to be said about him that hasn't been said already. I mean, he's on a fantastic run to start.
You just got to pick him up. And Swansea has some decent fixtures coming up, and he's easy money.
That team looks so good. I mean, that team looks like they could. I mean, and Gary Monk seems like the real deal. I mean, this is, you hear it from everybody.
Smart haircut too.
I don't know why I don't know who everybody means. I mean, I've read a couple articles online, but he does seem like a very, very smart, confident manager. The team is constructed as fantastic. Ashley Williams looks incredible.
That tackle he had on Rooney at the end of the game in the penalty box was like, when people say beast mode, that's what they mean.
it was a beautiful, like a painting can be made of that tackle. So good.
I mean, Rooney granted let him in. And should have been shooting that on his left much quicker.
But I can see they're going to be this year's Southampton, it looks like. Challenging all year in the Champions League spots, or in and out of them at least. Will probably fall off just a little bit at the end of the season, but it seems like they're at least going to be able to pick up a Europa League spot, or maybe go on a cup run or something like that. I mean, it's a really fun team to root for.
That would be so terrible for them to pick up a Europa League spot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. It's such a curse.
So speaking of, my winner of the week is actually Graziano Pelle on Southampton, mm-hmm. because I, for better or worse, have stuck with him, and he finally delivered for the first time since his goal in game week one, and I got a goal and an assist from him, and he looked rather decent. He was
bonus points, strangely.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, Tadic and Mane are partly to blame for that. And I think Pelé, his problem is he gives up possession too much. Being a target man, either he collects the ball and shoots more often than not off target, or he can't collect the ball and loses and gets tackled. And I'm sure that is not good for your BPS.
Tadic is so frustrating. Yeah, I just pulled up the stats a moment ago. So first game of the season, 90 minutes, one assist. Second game of the season, only plays 45 minutes, subbed at halftime. No points or assists, or one point. Doesn't even play in game week three. And then in game week four, scores two goals, racks up a clean sheet, picks up three bonus. He had 53 BPS this week. So he finishes with 16 points, very similar to game week eight last year. So it's really tempting to bring him in. You know, he's only 6.9.
But you also
you never know. I mean, he may not start the next game, despite what just happened.
Yeah, you don't get the sense that the manager has any great love for Tadic, even though he's gotten more starts this season. But
he's remarkably inconsistent. So Amane actually seems like the player who's. In fact, I'm very tempted to turn Depay into Amane, despite the fact that the fixtures are just okay.
Well, and we'll get to the transfer window in a minute, but I was really concerned about Pelé if Mane's rumored transfer to Man United actually went through. I'd be very concerned about the service happening there at Southampton. But it looks like, he's definitely staying, so that's great for your Southampton assets.
Yeah, that rumor came in very late. It's so hard to trust the last 72 hours or so.
Did you see the Jonathan Walters to Man United rumor that surfaced at the end of the window closing?
Is that true?
I think someone must have made that up. I think he was taking the piss on Twitter because he said, sorry, LVG, my helicopter didn't arrive in time.
Ah, I see.
So yeah. I assume so. I think he was just lamenting the fact that nobody wanted him.
Yeah, I had heard West Brom as a potential suitor for him, but... Yeah, I guess we'll get to that in a moment, though.
Disaster. Before we move on, though, my loser of the week is not a player. Josh, do you have any guesses as to who my loser of the week might be?
Would it be the all-out attack, Brandon?
It is. I played my first chip this week, and I went for the all-out attack chip, and I was looking at my defensive line, which I had Russell Martin, Luke Shaw, Robert Huth, Joel Ward. Maybe only Leicester at Bournemouth I was convinced of a clean sheet, and we know how that worked out. I just wasn't certain of any clean sheets, and I had Albrighton on my bench. Albrighton and Mahrez away to a promoted Bournemouth. I thought, why not? Let's play five in the midfield.
Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun. Exactly. And Ozil was against Newcastle, and of course, I get out of bed. We had plans to meet up at a bar in your neighborhood for the 7:45 Eastern Time kickoff, Newcastle-Arsenal. So I'm out of bed around 7 a.m., and I go to the John, and I'm sitting there checking my phone, looking at the starting lineup, and I'm sure you remember the scene from Breaking Bad where Hank Schrader pulls out the copy of Leaves of Grass and realizes that Walter White is Walter White.
Yeah.
That was the exact expression I had when I saw that Ozil was out with a knee niggle.
Right, because as an American, and you were walking across, neighborhood, right, from Prospect Heights to Park Slope.
It's like a good 40-minute walk.
Yeah, so you're up at 6:45 in the morning, you know, very, very, very early, at least for me it is, and on a Saturday morning, and you are about to watch a game that now has absolutely no fantasy implications for you.
And the only implications it has are negative. It's just me with my face in my palms the entire time.
Yeah.
So you were complaining about Skrtel losing his clean sheet after, what, like 15 minutes? Well, at least you had those 15 minutes, Josh.
I think it was actually 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
So it's pretty short.
5 minutes seems like 15 at Anfield, I'll tell you what.
Indeed.
So my first experience with the chip was not so good, but if I had to lose one chip with no great outcome, I guess it should be the all-out attack, which under scrutiny looks like a pretty worthless chip.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I would have waited if I were you.
What are the ideal circumstances in which you play the all-out attack?
Well, I don't mean to build everything around these double game weeks, but there really could be some times this year. A match could get canceled because of a snowstorm or something like that. You know, there could be times when you could play five players across who are all, all have double game weeks or all have fixtures. I don't know. I just feel like I might have waited a little bit longer. Also that Bournemouth team, their defense looked pretty good in the last game.
It's true. I think ultimately what I gave an elaborate explanation looking at my squad as to why I played all out attack. But honestly, I had a really bum week the week before, and my transfer was. Mahrez. I was just bandwagon jumping with my transfer. I needed some juice.
So this is in like 3 weeks when you play your triple captain. I expect to hear the same rationale.
Yep.
And then when you play the bench boost and 2 weeks after that, it'll be the same thing.
It's just all juice all the time over here for the BK Broilers.
You need your fix.
All right. So the transfer window has just closed. Some kind of not interesting stuff has happened. Should we just give it the rundown? You put together actually a pretty good comprehensive look at how the fantasy league transfers shook out.
Yeah, I highlighted 15 players who I think might be worth keeping an eye on. And I'm not going to run through all of them right now, but we're going to post them on the Always Cheating website. A couple that stand out as just people to keep an eye on. I'm not sure. Very few of these players are players that I would immediately want to draft into my team. I mean, you just never know. How quickly they're going to slot in. I mean, I guess, Virgil van Dijk, who moved to Southampton from Celtic, Celtic, that's the American, Celtic, is 5.5 million and is probably going to slot right into the Maya Yoshida spot.
I have such a soft spot for Maya Yoshida.
He looks like a nice guy.
He does look like a nice guy. And they pimp the shit out of him on all their marketing. I think because they're really going for maybe a Japanese fan base.
Right.
But Maya Yoshida, his face was all over FIFA 15. And if you follow Southampton's Instagram, you're guaranteed to get at least one Yoshida post a week.
The Yoshida watch?
The Yoshida watch.
Yeah, well, I think he's probably moving to the bench at this point. I don't know why. So he's 5.5 million. Came up from Celtic. I don't know. Offhand, I certainly wouldn't bring him right in. I mean, also, Cedric is still half a million cheaper, so he'd be the one I'd be looking at. If you wanted to bring a Southampton defender in, which I actually don't think is smart at the moment. Julian Lescott also moved over from West Brom to Aston Villa. I expect him to start right away.
And he's going to be reunited with his former Man City teammate, Micah Richards. That's interesting.
Yeah, although he's 0.3 more expensive. He's 4.9. He's moving over because he was already priced at 5 when he was at West Brom. And that price is really too high for him, I'd say, on Aston Villa. You wouldn't really want someone more than, I guess, Micah Richards is up to 4.6 now. But yeah. I got him at 4.5. That seems about as I'm not even really thrilled to have an Aston Villa defender at the moment.
It'll be interesting to see how that impacts the attack, because Micah Richards has been getting forward, but Lescott would be the main man on corner kicks. I mean, maybe they both will. But what I like more is Lescott's experience and leadership. I think that'll really bolster the Villa defense. Probably worth more of a shout for clean sheets at Villa.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, and I think
probably boosts Brad Guzan's value a little bit.
and hopefully Micah Richards too. get a little more ROI on that Richards pickup. I think I'm really surprised he was on the outs at Aston Villa. I mean, I thought he played pretty well for them last year. And
West Brom, you mean?
West Brom. Excuse me, he just moved to Aston Villa. It seems like he. I don't know. You know, it's a surprising thing, but I guess it's a fit in the Tony.
It's Gilles probably defense. That weird gash on his head that just makes him totally volatile and unpredictable, and it just can't last too long at any given team.
Tony Pulis is horribly vain, and his vanity extends.
No blights on his players.
So here's a couple.
To force him to wear a baseball cap.
We can talk about the bigger players in a minute. There are two players that I think are interesting in the midfield who just got transferred. One is Victor Moses, who moves to West Ham from Chelsea. And he was a hugely influential player last season at Stoke.
He had a couple blockbuster FPL weeks, yeah?
He did. He started really strong, and then he was out for most of the middle of the season, and then he came back very strong down the stretch. And he's priced at $5.3 million. So if he gets starts at West Ham, as we've seen, have multiple players who can score. I think that he could be a very interesting option there. So someone to keep an eye out for. Actually, in line with him is Jelovic, who moved from West Ham from Hull. Jelovic, you kind of know what you're getting with him. You know, he's steady but not very explosive. But he's only priced at $6 million. And
you have to believe that.
If he makes the rotation, he'd be one to keep an eye on, too.
Yeah, that would be my concern. I would, particularly if Andy Carroll gets back into the lineup, Carroll and Saka would be first choices, and Jelovic would just be a plan B, plan C.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but, you know, maybe all the players who got trained, I wouldn't bring in any of these guys, including Anthony Marshall, the Man U guy who just joined for Monaco. So the other one I want to highlight quickly in the...
Should we also point out, just speaking of West Ham, that Alex Song is back in the squad?
Oh, yeah, Song.
So, yeah, I mean, West Ham has been very mercurial, but today's events have been very positive, I would say.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, it's a weird team, right? I mean, an away win at Liverpool, an away win at Arsenal, and then two pretty bad losses at home.
Yeah.
You know? So hard to know what you're getting with that team at the moment. The other midfielder I wanted to highlight was Nathan Dyer, who moves from Swansea City to Leicester, and he is priced at $4.8 million at the moment. So if he is starting for Leicester, he could be a really excellent fifth midfielder option.
I'm trying to figure out where he fits into the lineup and who in that starting lineup could...
Danny Drinkwater, perhaps?
Yeah, that makes sense. That does. And that's great. I think, well, him and Jamie Vardy together, that's a lot of speed. Mm-hmm. You can see... Yeah, and then Albrighton sort of delivering some crosses for everybody. Mm-hmm. for everybody.
In your case.
hopefully for me. though, when I play my bench boost next week, I'm sure it'll work out.
Brandon, give me your thoughts on Diamersi Mobokani.
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I followed Dynamo Kiev very closely last season. I just have seen his name for the first time right now in your email that you sent me. He's at 6.0. Is he a defender?
He's a forward.
He's a forward. Okay.
Yeah, he's a 29-year-old. He's got a pretty good track record, actually. I mean, not a top league track record, but he scored 16 and 33 at Dynamo Kiev and 34 and 53 games at Anderlecht in Belgium League.
Okay.
And this is a Norwich team that is desperately in need of a forward. So I think that he's a player who may actually start right away. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily bring him in right away, but one to keep an eye out for. I think that team, they're moving forward. They actually look okay. And I think what they really need right now is someone who can finish. So he might be an under the radar pick.
Yeah. I mean, Cameron Jerome is a liability in the Premier League.
And I mean, come on, that guy has been moving in and out of the Premier League for like 7 or 8 years now. We know what we're getting with Jerome.
Yeah, we absolutely do.
Come on, Jerome.
We've seen it before, buddy. Take a hike.
Anybody else? Well, I guess Kevin De Bruyne is the other one to talk
Kevin
about.
Kevin De Bruyne is the big one, but we're Americans and we're U.S. Men's National Team fans. DeAndre Yedlin, he saw maybe like 20 minutes total for Spurs during his tenure there last season. So he's now following in Jozy Altidore's footsteps, which is problem number one. I would doubt we'll see him play very much at all at Sunderland.
It's not like that team is so rock solid in the defense that he couldn't find a way to earn a spot at some point.
They're not, and even they put him out on the wing in the midfield. He's got enough pace, but honestly, I think he's just like a marketing buck for the American audience that's being passed around the Premier League right now.
It could be. I think that does Patrick Van Aanholt, does he play on the left or the right? I can't remember.
He's on the left.
Okay, so with Van Aanholt on the left and Yedlin on the right, you'd have a lot of speed, which would be kind of interesting. I'm actually not sure if speed is what they really need right now.
That's true. And then they can just bomb up the wings, and Cattermole can just jump kick people to prevent them from getting beyond the last line of defense.
Yeah, Cattermole the guy basically is like five games on, one game off at this point, right? He plays five games, gets five yellow cards. Serves his one game suspension, comes back, racks up five more yellow cards, serves suspension.
Two heinous penalties he's already given away this season. One to Mahrez and then the other to Sinclair. That guy, he's
amazing. He's amazing to watch. It's incredible. I mean, I don't even know where they'd be without him is the thing. I mean, they probably wouldn't have a point. I mean, he's flying around. He's just a cut above Charlie Austin, basically. I mean, he's a better player than Austin, but he's got that style where it's just—I mean, the guy is just a walking yellow card.
Okay, we're getting sidetracked from transfer talk here, but De Bruyne, priced at 10.0, that seems ludicrous to me.
I just, you know,
higher than Pedro.
If Man City had started the season, with two wins, a draw, and a loss, do you think he'd come in at 10 million? I mean, I just wonder if part of that is. Man City team is on fire right now. They're bringing in a player with a proven record, at least at Wolfsburg. It's pretty spotty when he was at Chelsea. I don't know. I mean, maybe they just think, well, this team is on a roll right now. He's got to be priced accordingly. I don't know.
For me, the only reason to bring him into your FPL squad would be for a differential, because at 10.0, I can't imagine anybody's going to be bringing him in.
I guess if you were trying to offload Sanchez, you know, or even Eden Hazard, that might be interesting. For someone like me, who's already like kind of, I mean, I you don't want to play the differential game too early in the season. It's a mistake I've made in years past. I mean, it's a long season. But I think, if you wanted somebody, the problem is I'm not sure if he's going to start right away. I mean, everyone sort of expects him to displace Jesus Navas at some point, but it may take, you know, 2 or 3 weeks for him to get there.
Another weirdly high price tag is for Anthony Martial at 8.0. The 19-year-old striker is coming into Manchester United from Monaco.
I'm not sure that that's... I actually don't know that I agree with that. I think, he is young, but I think there's a pretty decent chance that he'll actually end up displacing Rooney. And it's not that Rooney won't start, but Rooney will get moved to the middle. You know, like the kind of an Ander Herrera spot or something like that.
So I was looking at United's Instagram account, and they posted a picture of Martial welcoming to the club, and it says at @Martial_9 has scored more goals in parentheses 9 than any other teenager in Europe's top 5 leagues since the start of last season. That to me is a pretty that's a bit of a stretch for an impressive stat.
Yeah, I mean, I won't pretend that I've been sitting around watching Monaco clips in anticipation of this move.
8.0, yeah. When you could look at guys like Pele or Lukaku, who's just a little bit more, or Benteke at 8.5, who are proven goal scorers in the Premier League, yeah. It seems insane that you would take an 8.0 punt on a 19-year-old striker in a team that really has no form to speak of right now.
He's like, it's with him, it's like the vice president or something. You know, it's like, right now he's nothing, but he could be everything. You know, and it's like if something
he's
happens,
a gunshot away.
Yeah, I think I stole the line from John Adams.
Or he's a heart attack away, I guess, to be less morbid.
But
as morbid.
If he puts in a couple of good performances and earns a starting spot on that team, I mean, we're only in week four, right? If this guy is starting every week for Man United, beginning in week eight, you're talking about 30 weeks with a $8 million Man United forward. I mean, that is an absolute steal, right? So if that were, I guess they just couldn't price him too low because if he does play a lot,
yeah, then they look like idiots.
You've got a Harry Kane situation.
Yeah, right? I buy that. Definitely buy that. Before we move on from transfer talk, we have to shout out to the flash in the pan bandwagon from the end of last season, Glenn Murray, Crystal Palace to Bournemouth. Is he going to play?
No, I don't think he. I guess I don't know enough about the Bournemouth, formation to know if they would play two strikers up front. I don't really think of him as an on the shoulder guy. You know, he seems like he's basically a straight up forward. I mean, despite the fact that looks like he's 47,
he does look super, super old.
I think I don't know. I mean, he's only 5.8, so if he plays, he's actually still more expensive than Callum Wilson. So at the time being, you certainly wouldn't want to bring him in. But
so we'll put him in the bench boost category.
Put him in the bench boost category.
All right, so that's enough transfer talk. Let us get to the proceedings from last weekend, game week four. We picked out three fixtures to focus in on: Chelsea, Crystal Palace, Liverpool, West Ham, and Swansea Man United. But let's just quickly run through the scores here. So Newcastle loses 0-1 on an Oxlade-Chamberlain assist and an own goal. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a nothing match. Arsenal has no bite. They made, and of course they reacted by not bringing in any transfers during the window.
Yeah, let's just move on.
So Villa Sunderland was a pretty kind of an interesting match to follow in that it looked like, I mean, it was a pretty evenly matched squads and some really nice goals.
Yeah, honestly, you kind of know when your season's not going well when you have two players on that Aston Villa team. Like I was watching that game at that we were watching at this bar called the Black Horse Pub in Brooklyn, and I out of the corner of the screen I see again within 5 minutes Sunderland has scored a goal. I've lost another clean sheet with Michael Richards, and Ashley Westwood. I mean, that was always a bit of a punt. The problem was I put myself in this position because I had Westwood or Troy Deeney as my kind of 11th player.
Spicy.
Week. Yeah. And I just thought, I brought in Westwood. If I was ever going to play Westwood, it was at home to Sunderland.
Oh, right? for sure.
So it seemed like the right decision at the time. I mean, neither player scored. If Troy Deeney had scored, I would be really kicking myself right now.
Well, one thing to note there, Scott Sinclair at 4.9, he has 5 goals in 2 games for Villa. He's definitely worth a look. And Lee Cattermole, as we were saying, also worth a look there.
Yep.
Bournemouth tied Leicester City. Callum Wilson, the bandwagon of the week, scores an overhead kick.
It was ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was so lucky. I mean, everybody brought him in this week.
Yeah, a classic bandwagon kick. Resistance, and we paid the price.
I know. Deeney would have slotted. I would have actually earned 0.1 million.
That's the sort of bicycle kick that solidifies your stance on believing he is a bandwagon or not wanting to jump on it. Because what's just more outrageously lucky than a free 50-50 ball that you're going to score with an overhead kick?
Yeah, it was a little strange. There's another fantasy podcast that we both know and like, where a particular member of that podcast was talking about this Bournemouth team, like you should have like 3 players, maybe 4, if you can rig the rules. I mean, it was so. I mean, it was Troy Deeney scored a hat trick last week, against West Ham. One goal was on a penalty. One goal was on a terrible back pass.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like this guy was Luis Suarez or something.
Yeah, you know, right. Like making all of his own chances.
I mean, he did nothing at home to Aston Villa. He did nothing really on the road to Liverpool. Scores an overhead kick in this last game. I'm not saying that he might not be this year's Charlie Austin, but I think it's still too early to tell.
The other talking point is another bandwagon with Mahrez going off at halftime with a little bit of a knock. Are we worried about that? Have we heard any reports?
I checked earlier today, actually, just out of curiosity. No, he's actually traveling with the Algerian national team. He has not played or practiced with them.
Okay. I wonder if there's a little 2 weeks.
So yeah. If he's traveling with them, it can't be that bad, right? If it were really bad, he'd be staying.
He'd be in a hyperbaric chamber somewhere.
That's right. He'd be getting one of those blood spinners in Germany.
So now we come to one of the fixtures that we do want to look at a little more closely. Chelsea 1, Crystal Palace 2. Only the second time in 100 games that Jose Mourinho has lost at Stamford Bridge. And, man, I'm sure glad that I buried Joel Ward on my bench. And
who would have thought, right?
It's unreal. On a diving header, when he was just loitering in the 6-yard box.
Yeah, I think that I don't know what to say about this game. I mean, I sort of felt like I was I'm actually going to keep the faith with Chelsea. I know it seems crazy, but it's like I feel like I'm some investor with like I've got my like blue chip stocks and Azpilicueta and Hazard, and it has not panned out. But I'm gonna keep the faith. Wait for the stock. Wait for all the panics to subside and let Eden Hazard. Because if Eden Hazard does, I mean, maybe it might just be wishful thinking at this point.
Yeah.
But if Eden Hazard goes off, and suddenly you've got an 11.5 million player that is almost impossible to bring in.
Surely he's at 11.4 by now.
Perhaps he's at 11.4. But very difficult to bring into your team, right? So he's a great player who could also become a great differential because so many people don't have him in his team right now.
Yeah,
so
and anyone looking at Chelsea midfield is going to be bringing in Pedro instead of Hazard at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of wild card Pedros over the internet.
I were in that position.
Oh, I'm definitely looking at Pedro right now.
Yeah.
I'm looking at him hard.
What do you think about the Crystal Palace performance?
They looked amazing. They look great. I mean, Chelsea didn't do themselves any favors. I made the comment to you when we were sitting at the Black Horse that Chelsea looked a little bit like me playing FIFA, like just sort of like trying to find angles and making very rudimentary passes and just sort of shifting the ball around the field, but with no real great determination or purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They lacked Fabregas really orchestrating anything, and Hazard wasn't making anything happen. But then Crystal Palace had so much, like everyone was predicting, they were attacking Chelsea down the wings. Bolasie, people predicted that he would not see the pitch because of his father passing away. But there he was, and he was looking very determined.
Yeah.
You have to love their midfield. My one problem with Crystal Palace is Connor Wickham, which he just looks like a crumpled up plastic bag blowing around the field, getting in everyone's way.
Should have been called for that penalty.
Yeah, pulling Zuma down. What was he thinking there? And
by the way, what do you have to do to get called for a penalty for a foul in the box? And we've seen this 2 weeks in a row. We saw Micah Richards against Man United, where Darmian basically grabbed Richards by the neck and held him with two hands by the neck while the ball was coming
horse collared him. The one call I do remember, I think it was two seasons ago, and I only remember this because I was playing Per Mertesacker in my FPL team, and he has had his jersey pulled on a corner kick and won a penalty, and I got a clean sheet and an assist and bonus points. It was glorious.
Great
moments in FPL history.
I mean, you moved to New York for stuff like that, Brandon.
Only here. I was assuming that Charlie Austin would be coming into Crystal Palace. Wouldn't Charlie Austin be a great replacement for Connor Wickham?
I can't believe no one picked Charlie Austin up. I'm stunned. I mean, are you telling me that Watford couldn't use Charlie Austin? I mean, there's so many teams that could use Newcastle. It's crazy that he couldn't find a spot.
Apparently he has a bum knee, but you look at Diego Costa, which he could basically spontaneously combust at any moment, yet Chelsea is still relying on him heavily for goals.
I think we'll see someone bring him in January. It just seems so unlikely that, I mean, particularly if QPR is in first or second and they're challenging to get promoted, he might stay with that team. But, if Bournemouth starts to fall off, and if Wilson doesn't keep up his Zlatan-esque scoring streak, then it could be someone like that. I don't know. I just think that Austin will find a Premier League team at some point. I love that guy.
So Bakary Sakho in Crystal Palace's midfield was the big winner this week. He got all three bonus. He had a goal and an assist. So you have to like him for value. But me as a Joel Ward owner. Super excited because with two goals under his belt over the two-week international break, his value at 4.5 is guaranteed to go up.
I'm shocked that he's actually still priced at 4.5 at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, at any changeover with the site, I'm waiting for him to go up to 4.6. I mean, he'll probably be 4.7 by the time everyone plays their wild cards, I'm guessing.
Sako is an interesting player, not probably one to bring in for game weeks 5 and 6. They're home to Man City and away to Spurs. But after that, it's away to Watford, home to West Brom, home to West Ham, away to Leicester. You know, those are all tasty fixtures.
Absolutely. So that's that. Chelsea, keep the faith. Returns will come. Crystal Palace, also worth investment. They look great, though troubling fixtures in the next two game weeks. The next fixture we want to take a close look at is Liverpool's home defeat to West Ham. And what can you say? West Ham has, as I was saying earlier, established this pattern of being blistering away from home.
Yeah, I mean, this is almost like, you might as well just call it the Dejan Lovren game, right? I mean, Dejan Lovren killed Liverpool in this game.
He did. I weirdly find myself coming to Lovren's defense. I guess any time I'm looking at Lovren, he's doing something good. And then every time I look away, he does something incredibly bad.
It wasn't just the terrible crossover. I mean, the second goal came directly from a Dejan Lovren mistake.
Oh, yeah. That was like straight up Benny Hill right there when he lost the ball in the corner after trying to juke. It was shades of Arthur Barak when he was goalkeeper for Southampton and he tried to juke Olivier Giroud only to give away an open net goal.
I'd love that. I mean, that is one of the Dirty Tackle website have one of the greatest write-ups of that Baruch. We'll post that on Twitter and on our website too. Just like the sequence of events and like crazy stepovers that Baruch attempts instead of just at some point you just kick the ball out, right? And just like conceded a corner kick.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a disaster.
or just fall down faking an injury.
Yeah, exactly. So that Liverpool game, it's okay. So. Two thoughts. One is it might have just been one of those games, right? I mean, just a bad game. And it's not necessarily indicative of a million different things, right?
I would agree with that, definitely.
Yeah, I think, but the one thing I will say is it does give me pause when it comes to Christian Benteke and a reminder that they bought a big, strong player, but not a player who is necessarily the most consistent of all players, right? I mean, they bought He's got a lot of potential still, and he's very strong, and he probably will fit particularly well into that team if Daniel Sturridge ever comes back, which looks like he finally might.
Right.
But he's not, you know, he's not an every game scorer necessarily. You know, he's not even Wilfred Bony. You know,
It's hard to say with Jordan Henderson, but I am a believer that this midfield is really impacted by Jordan Henderson not being in the squad, and it's left Milner to do a lot of the heavy lifting when I think Milner would have been better as just a utility man playing off of Jordan Henderson. So Benteke is not getting the optimal service, and I guess the problem then with Liverpool is they have a lot of new guys in the midfield like Firmino that haven't fully bedded in, and then Coutinho, who's much more interested in 40-yard screamers than he is actually nice service to their target man.
Yeah, although he did played very well in the Arsenal game the week before.
I agree. I mean, that's a guy that it's a little bit like, I think I want to adopt a cat. And I go over to somebody's house, and they've got a cat. I'm like, oh, cute cat. By the time I leave the house, I'm like, Jesus, I'm so glad I don't have a cat. That's a little bit how I feel about Coutinho. One week, I'm like, oh, man, it'll be really nice to have Coutinho in my FPL squad. And then the next week, I'm like, oh, God, thank God.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little bit like, I actually had Coutinho for a lot of last season. Like, I felt that way a lot. He's like the poor man's David Silva. You know, David Silva... when you own Silva, you will frequently go 3 or 4 weeks without anything amazing, but you'll typically get at least an assist, you know, like just enough to keep you going, you know, and in between his like, you know, goal, assist, 3 bonus point games. Coutinho is not quite that consistent.
So where are you with Martin Skrtel now?
Well, okay, so
you're looking to offload him?
No. I don't plan to start him this next week, but the two fixtures after that are very appealing. It's Norwich and Aston Villa at home are the next two games.
Three clean sheets already. Liverpool's good for some cleans, and then Nathaniel Clyne, also like a guy I will probably want to have in my lineup at some point. I really hesitate to give any recommendations as far as West Ham is concerned, other than the fact that my main man, Reece Oxford, got back on the field today. So my my first game week transfer of this FPL season is already earning out.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that West Ham team is it's hard to know which player you'd want on that team at the moment. I mean, they're getting scoring from a lot of different people. You know, Aaron Cresswell, Kiate, Paye. Sako finally scored.
Yeah, I guess the smart money is on Paye and Sako to be the ones that are going to be the highest point getters.
Right, but if Kiate continues to perform at 5.6 million, it's very tempting to bring him in. I mean, it's two goals and an assist already at now he's at 5.6 million.
Classic Mark Noble FPL maneuver as well. If he gets a goal, he's guaranteed to also get sent off. It's remarkable. If nothing, he's consistent.
Yeah, really. That was so strange.
All right, moving on down the game week 4 fixture list. Manchester City beat Watford 2-0. Everyone captained Aguero this week for nothing.
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row. That was brutal.
I'm unsure. I want to set it and forget it with Aguero because he will earn out. Even in difficult fixtures, you have to believe he might.
But this is what I was talking about last week about the template team thinking, right? That like it's like people and I captained the last 2 weeks too, so I'm not going to pretend that I'm not part of this thought process. But I feel like you read these forums and people start complaining. They're like, well, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I've got the template team,
right?
Know?
Yeah,
and it's like, well, yeah, but just because everyone is screaming at you to cap. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you couldn't have captained Aguero at home to Watford.
Yeah, I think if you stick with the armband on Aguero, it's partially out of fear, just a fear that he will have a 4-goal game and you'll miss out.
But like last week, I mean, he was away to Everton and everyone captained him. You know, and when I say everyone, I mean everyone in kind of a group of super nerds, a category I include myself in, who are, you know,
who are
all
still
talking to each other on these various forums.
Yeah, reaching for that top 2 million ranking.
Yeah, I know. I can't even talk about my rankings or anything right now. It's too painful.
Okay, so moving on, Stoke, West Brom, two red cards for Stoke in this game. So your Jack Butland goalkeeper choice did not work out there at all.
They held tough.
Yeah, he almost pulled it out.
Yeah, until extra time of the first half.
So Stoke is yet to really take off, and West Brom defensively strong. Then we come to Spurs, Everton, 0-0, kind of predictable there. Harry Kane, still in a lot of people's squads, hasn't got out of the blocks. He was in on Tim Howard with an easy goal, and, I mean, Howard had a bit of a blinder, but Kane should have been putting that one away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what week it is.
You had your meltdown by this point, and you missed watching this game live. Did you watch any of the highlights?
I watched a little bit of live, yeah.
It was a game of two goalkeepers. Hugo Lloris also had a really great game, too. Okay, then Southampton, moving into the Sunday fixture, Southampton 3, Norwich 0. As we mentioned, Pele, Tadic, Mane, bringing the hot rocks, all contributing to the offense there. So worth another look for investment. And the last game we wanted to talk about is the last fixture of the game week, Swansea 2, Man United 1. We talked a little bit about this earlier in the pod with AU's dynamite assist, Gomez is 4-for-4 with goals, Ashley Williams with the greatest tackle of the season thus far, and Rooney in the penalty box.
Yeah, the only thing I really want to say about this game is it becomes very interesting now to see what happens with the Man United goalkeeping situation. I mean, it's very clear that David De Gea should immediately slot in to this Man United team. I mean, I don't know. It may take a while. You know, I don't know. I mean, Romero did keep three clean sheets in a row before really being at fault for that fourth goal or for the second goal in game week 4.
Yeah, and though he's keeping clean sheets, he looks a little dazed and confused back there, even when they are looking solid.
I think he's always smiling. It makes you suspicious of him. Like, it's like I don't like someone who smiles that much. It's like they're trying to put one over on me or something.
Oh yeah, they know. Romero knows something that you don't know, Josh.
Yeah, like I might have lived in New York too long at this point, right? I see someone smiling and I immediately assume the worst.
Yeah, so is De Gea, this is just such a disaster for De Gea and United. Can De Gea even get back into the squad? Would he even play for them?
I think he will. I mean, who knows?
I guess he has to make lemonade at this point.
Yeah, you've got to think about, you just have to hang back and watch and see what happens. I mean, so let's see. Over the last 3 weeks, it looks like something like about 300,000 people have transferred in Romero. So a lot of people could be looking to make a big escape, and a lot of people have already wildcarded. So there's nothing worse than burning a transfer on a goalkeeper. I don't know why it feels even worse than a defender, but it's so brutal. Maybe because you always have the other keeper. You know, you always just assume that you can get through 1 week without making the transfer.
Absolutely.
But I would expect that within a couple of weeks, De Gea will come back. I mean, it's not like it's not like it's such a disaster for him, really. I mean, this team, they have 9 points out of 12, 9 out of a possible 12 points. They only have they have 7 points because they drew at home to Newcastle somehow. But still, they have they're I guess it looks like they're in fifth place right now. They're playing in the Champions League this year. They got a great draw. So I think that he'll be fine. And Romero, you could just put him right into the cups in the Champions League.
It's a test of Louis van Gaal's man management, I guess, which he's not known for having great skills, whether he can get De Gea to fall back in line.
Yeah, I mean, De Gea doesn't seem like a bad guy. So, I think it'll work out. And then he leaves on a free at the end of the year. And,
yeah.
Just forgets about it.
So Rooney's got to be on his way out of your FPL squad. And then Memphis Depay, I mentioned on Twitter, he is buying early admission to the Jose Altidor home for Premier League rejects. He looks like total dog shit out there.
Yeah, he's just so far out on the left. I mean, he feels like he's just a safety valve out there. I mean, he's not involved in the play at all. I felt like maybe when they made their third change, he was playing a little more centrally. I can't remember who the third change was at this point, but it just, they brought in Fellaini, who
did Plan B.
Yeah, that was so, and then they just played long ball.
It was so transparent what their tactic was there. It really made it easy for Gary Monk to adjust.
It was embarrassing. It was like when David Moyes was still there.
I mean, I'm far less concerned about Memphis Depay's positioning than I am his actions on the ball and the shape of his crosses. His crosses resemble Michael Jordan shooting a 3-point shot. There's no arc on them. They don't seem to be going anywhere in particular. And he still looks so timid when he's taking somebody one-on-one. I mean, he's out of my squad.
He's out of the squad.
He's out. He's totally out. I mean, are you going to be a little more patient?
No, I mentioned at the start of the podcast many hours ago that I'm considering actually making two transfers. It would probably be Azpilicueta and Depay, and I would bring in Kolarov, who is probably a must-own player at this point, and at least for the next. Just the way the fixtures they have coming up and the way that he's playing, it would be very difficult to get to the next few weeks without him. And then maybe bring in. Could be Ayu. I mean, I don't know. It's actually tempting to wait a couple of weeks and try to bring in Sakho because he's only 5.5, and you could, free up $3 million to spend elsewhere.
Right. I mean, 2 weeks for the international break, I'm definitely tempted to play the market and get Depay out for Pedro or Ayu to get those price rises that are surely coming for both of those guys.
Yeah, I'm not so much of a price rise maniac. Although the prices
we're maniacs now.
Although the prices do seem like they're rising, does it seem like they're rising more quickly than last year? I felt like the first week of the season they held, but really all hell has broken loose since game week 2 started.
Okay, so as we mentioned, we're heading into the international break. Fortunately, one of our private league members is getting married. Actually, two of our private league members are getting married to each other. weekend. So they happily scheduled their wedding for a week off of the FPL. But I just wanted to mention the U.S. men's national team fixtures for the international break, because we'll all be watching as they take on Peru at the RFK Stadium this Friday at 7 p.m. And they'll be without Michael Bradley or Clint Dempsey because they're supposedly working off knocks, but then they're rejoining the team, according to the U.S. men's national team roster, for their game against Brazil, which they're playing at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass.
Oh, interesting. That could be an interesting game.
So before we leave, we should give a quick rundown of Game Week 5, because we're going to take the week off for the international break. But we want to leave you with all of our hot takes, because we are two of the greatest FPL managers in all of the United States. So you'll want to take our advice to heart.
You desperately need our advice.
So, Josh, can you take us through fixtures for Game Week 5 real quick?
Okay, so Saturday, September 12th, the first morning, the first fixture of the morning is Everton-Chelsea. And that game is at Goodison Park. Great game last year, 5-3 Chelsea win over Everton.
Yeah, first great game of that season.
Yeah, possibly the best game of that season.
I mean, Tim Howard got totally screwed on the offside call with Diego Costa, where they got a goal what was like in the first 5 minutes of the game, and just all hell broke loose after that.
Yeah, so hard to know if that's indicative of. This is a very hard game to predict. If I would not take a punt on this game.
I would predict that both teams score in this game at the very least.
Seems likely. Let's say Chelsea will start winning games. This team is too good not to start winning games. So I'll predict a 3-1 Chelsea win.
Yeah.
Next game is Arsenal-Stoke. Arsenal's at home. God, this team really, you keep expecting them to turn around. I mean, it was very strange. They're not the kind of team that necessarily will destroy a 10-man team. So I wasn't, they just don't have that kind of... they're not lethal.
No, exactly. Yeah, they're just they're purely academic.
And I say this as an Arsenal fan and supporter, but as soon as there was a red card, I thought, oh god! Like I knew what kind of game we were in for.
Yeah.
So at home against Stoke, a Stoke team that is clearly still figuring itself out, given how
the break comes at a good
sanity
time for them.
Of that West Brom game. Yeah, it does come at a good time for them. They can start to integrate some of those players.
Yeah, I agree. I think if there was no break, Stoke would be pretty wounded coming into the next game week. But yeah. I think they'll be well served, and it could be a challenge.
It could be a challenge, but I would predict an Arsenal win there.
And probably an Arsenal clean sheet.
Probably. Although it's Arsenal, so, let's say 2-1 Arsenal. The next game is Crystal Palace at home to Man City. A game I'm really excited to watch.
Yes, absolutely. Crystal Palace is like the hipster's delight right now.
Yeah, Crystal Palace and Swansea. You've got a lot of nice options this year. I think that...
Joel Ward will still be buried on my bench for this one.
You could see Crystal Palace getting a point from this game. A win is a little tougher to imagine.
Yeah.
But, coming out of the international break, the problem is Crystal Palace probably has only one or two players who are playing in the break, and Man City, probably their whole team will be away, or the vast majority of the players. So
De Bruyne maybe making his debut here?
You do sometimes see this, though, where, when a team, the team that doesn't have the players on the break actually can pick up a win against a top team, because that team is, like a player, flew to South America or something like that, and they're not quite ready to get back into the season.
I would guess Aguero...
That's kind of a mouthful, but I hope you follow me there.
Aguero can't be traveling with Argentina. I mean, he's coming back from the Copa America. He's got to need a break, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure, actually. I would think so, too.
All right, what's next?
Next is Norwich at home to Bournemouth. Bournemouth, still not sure about that one. I think this is a 1-0 Norwich win.
Callum Wilson not going to come through? Are you being a little biased because you're a non-bandwagoner?
I am on the Norwich bandwagon, and I want another Russell Wilson goal. I'm predicting a goal and a clean sheet.
I'll take it. I'll be starting George R. Russell Martin as well. So let's see the song. Let's see the dance of the dragons out there for Norwich City.
Watford Swansea. Watford has to score at some point. They can't just keep pulling out nil-nil wins or you know, narrow losses on the road. I mean, it's at some point they're going to have to score. So
that is the dilemma for me because I have Fabianski on my bench. So Joe Hart for Man City, he's my other goalkeeper. He's going to be susceptible to counterattacking goals against Crystal Palace. But I totally agree. Watford will score at some point. Why not this game?
I would probably start Joe Hart if I were you, right? I mean, you've got to go with the guy who's hasn't conceded a goal yet this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
So probably
thank you for your assurance. I'm actually changing my team right now.
Probably a Swansea win, I would expect, though. Let's say 2-1 Swansea or something.
Gomez going to make it 5-for-5? Maybe even 6-for-5?
Why not? I mean, I don't know how you could bet against him at the moment.
Yeah.
Next game is West Brom, Southampton, two teams that we don't know enough about yet. Southampton does look better now. Tadic and Mane play the way they do, they look like they could challenge for the Champions League. I mean, that's how good those guys look when they're really rolling. But that happens once every 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, it's not a good matchup for Pele to have coming off of scoring a goal because West Brom's defense is going to be tough at home. So, and he's a streaky guy, and I want him to keep his streak going. But I don't know. I feel like it's going to be tough for him. I think if Southampton is going to score against West Brom, it's going to be Mane.
Yeah, I would definitely be staying away from this game, though.
Yeah.
I'm talking about this as if I'm betting on these games. But I don't know who I'd want from a player perspective in this game either. I mean, I don't know that Mane is really... It's tempting to bring in Mane because he played so well last game, but I think you have to give it another week or two to make sure he's really... That wasn't just a flash in the... I mean, I know he was great last year, but this year he's not started very strong.
Yeah, we don't have enough data.
Right. The 12:30 game Eastern time on Saturday is
prime time.
Yeah, the 12th, which seems incredibly far away, is Man United at home to Liverpool.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
this game is going to be great.
Yeah, I'm excited about this game. I can't decide. I may keep Depay for one more week. It just depends on whether I want to burn points or not. I'm not afraid to burn points. But I don't know. It just depends. We'll see. I don't know. I don't even know what to think about this game.
Yeah,
I think Liverpool would come out a little bit stronger given what happened against West Ham. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this game?
Well, I said it's going to be great, but I think I have to revise that in that it could be great or it could be really dire because both of these teams this season have had good defensive records, so they could both lean on that. Mm-hmm. But if they both go for it, it could be a really open game.
Yeah,
I would really hope that Jordan Henderson is back for this game, as I was saying earlier in the podcast. But I agree. I think Liverpool, I would say, looks the favorite here because United just still looks very uncertain.
Yeah, I would.
They've yet to make a statement. Whereas I feel like Liverpool has to be really happy with how Benteke might square up against the very short defense of Man United.
I thought the same thing. Even though Smalling has played really well this year, I think that I could definitely see Benteke scoring in this game. I think this could be like a 1-1 draw.
Yeah. Well, I'll agree. I'll take it.
All right. Sunday fixtures. First one is
Luke Shaw with the assist on that goal, by the way.
First fixture is Sunderland Spurs. Interesting fixture. Sort of. Actually, I don't know why it's interesting. It's actually kind of a game I would happily sleep through. Sunderland did look a little bit better. Maybe we'll see DeAndre Yedlin.
Yeah, that's what makes it interesting. It's the Yedlin derby.
Yeah, it's true. And Spurs look pretty dire at the moment. And I don't know what happened with the Berahino situation. I mean, I know they're sort of famously cheap and don't want to pay, you know, like a penny more than anybody's worth. But it seems like Berahino really could have helped this team.
I guess. I'm not a fan of Berahino.
But you're talking about Berahino within West Brom, right? I mean, Berahino, when he's playing off Harry Kane, that could be a very different version of Berahino.
It could. He just seems like a bitch, to be frank.
Yeah, I mean, the last, like, the today has not helped his image.
Yeah.
But he's also, like, he's 20, you know, 21. I mean,
it's true. You put them under the microscope, under a lot of scrutiny. It's not fair. But so Yedlin and Fabio Borini.
Yeah, Borini. Yeah, who
Borini
knows?
Back in the Sunderland squad.
Yeah, almost joined last year. Wanted to try and break into that Liverpool lineup. It did not happen. Was never going to happen. Like, it was crazy that he didn't sign with them last year. Like, there was a team that wanted him, and he's no good. So yeah, yeah. He's okay. I don't know.
We've all been in that job situation where we're just basically begging our boss for a promotion, and he's like, my hands are tied.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, well, I just don't want to look for another job. But in this case, someone was like, it was like a smaller, yeah, well, anyway.
It is a rather elaborate metaphor.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, though.
Spurs will get a win here.
Yeah, you would think so. Let's see. Leicester Aston Villa is the afternoon. That is a crazy Sunday afternoon game. Like, you know, you don't typically see a game like that as like the featured weekend afternoon game.
It really is, but intriguing nonetheless, I suppose.
Yeah, I will have two players in this game, assuming that Mahrez is... You know, actually, I will have a full allotment of Leicester players in this game.
Right, because you have Schmeichel in goal?
Yeah, Schmeichel in goal. I can't think of his name. The defender.
Robert Huth?
No, the other one.
Wes Morgan?
Yeah, Wes Morgan. Thank you. I'll have Schmeichel, Wes Morgan, and Mahrez all in this game. So.
I could name the whole lineup if you want me to.
Don't forget Denny Drinkwater.
Don't drink the drink water. Don't
drink the drink water. You know, Leicester should be favored in this game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that, you know, I expect them to win. I mean, given how they've looked so far this year, I think it's not difficult to predict the Leicester win.
Given the way they've played, but I'm curious to see if and how Leicester peters out, because I would predict they will peter out sort of like in a Southampton sort of way last season. And like we were saying, Villa strengthened in the defense with Julian Lescott. I could see Villa putting up enough of a fight where maybe it's a 1-0 win for Leicester, a tougher game than one might call.
That's possible. And Scott Sinclair, as you mentioned earlier, looks really good at the moment. So, you know, I mean, I guess like many of these fixtures, it's kind of an interesting week. A lot of these fixtures are not clear-cut victories one way or the other. But I would expect Leicester to win this game and hopefully keep a clean sheet.
All right,
a lot of points on my end depend on that.
All right, take us home, Josh.
Final game is West Ham-Newcastle.
This is one of those games where it's going to be happening while I'm at work, and I'm very happy that this is the matchup because I won't have any players. I'm just going to turn off my phone, and I'm not going to care at all.
Yeah, it's really true. I mean, you wouldn't be missing very much. Aaron Cresswell is really emerging as somebody to try to bring in. I mean, he just offers so much. I mean, he's one of the few defenders who consistently offers you goal and assist threat.
He's Joel Ward-esque.
Yeah. I mean, no one's Joel Ward, of course, but Cresswell gets close.
So, sadly, Newcastle will be without their new guy, Mitrovic, but Tovin is a guy that everyone is really keen on, and maybe this is a game that he can make his first attacking contribution.
Possible.
I mean, West Ham is at home. They're liable to give up 5, 6, 7 goals.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah, I mean, as long as they keep winning their win fixtures, it doesn't matter. 3, 4, 5, 6 goals.
Did Papi Cisse end up going anywhere today?
No Cisse moves. So he's still on the team.
Cool. The long sleeve contingent remains strong in the Premier League.
That's right. All right. So that is the final fixture, Brandon. I think we got through everything in a brisk hour and 12 minutes. It felt like an hour and 8, honestly.
We're timely, if nothing else. So go US, beat Peru. We're really pulling for you. But yeah, enjoy the international break. We're going to be celebrating Trevor and Stephanie. So cheers to you guys. But in the meantime, Josh, where can everyone find Always Cheating?
Find us on Twitter at Hail Cheaters, and you can also get the league code there. You can also find us on the website, alwayscheating.com, and we're also on Facebook. Definitely go out and join the public league. There's a very good chance that we will talk about you, especially because we only have 10 people in the league so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and we're on Stitcher Radio, and find us on SoundCloud. It would be great if some enterprising person out there could write us a review, because we love your feedback.
Mm-hmm. That's right. All right, and we love the SEO your feedback brings. That was sort of hidden behind what Brandon was saying.
Absolutely. Okay, Josh, so I'll see you at the wedding. Enjoy the break, and we'll talk to you later.
All right, talk to you soon.
Poku forever.
Poku forever.